Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're here to render judgment on the worlds of celebrity, pop culture, television, and fashion.
Strap yourselves in for some hardcore opinionating, darlings.
This is Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're Tom and Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the T in your Tilo, Tom Pichon. I'm here with the Low in your Tilo, Lorenzo. My kids follow this. But
hello.
And we just got done chatting, doing our little pre-show chat about what we're going to talk about. And it all came down to one topic, believe it or not. We are pretty much going to devote most of this to red carpet discussions, the kind of more in-depth stuff that you can't do when you're doing, just drive-by assessments of outfits. We're going to look at some of the up-and-comers in red carpet fashion who have been really bringing their A games this award season. We're going to look at things like the trend in menswear and the trends in womenswear on the red carpet, the way things are slightly shifting. Basically, it's all about winds of change on the red carpet, and also about the newer turns of diversity that are showing up on the red carpet. The way things, the way new faces have popped up, representing new people, right. And all of that is very exciting. But first, I think we're going to do a little bit of TV talk. Well, first off, Lorenzo, how are you?
I am wonderful.
How's
Unfortunately,
your week
I don't
going?
Have a. Fine. Just we've been very busy, as everyone
extremely
knows.
Busy.
But
everybody's
then,
busy.
I've been trying to find something on Netflix. That's why I don't have anything about Netflix, because I couldn't find anything interesting to watch. I'm also, because a lot of our listeners and readers don't have Netflix, but they have Amazon Prime. So I'm trying to watch more stuff on Amazon Prime. So I have some recommendations there as well.
Oh, let's hear it.
No, I'm looking. I'll let everyone know when I
caught
find
me off guard. I was like, oh, no, I didn't know you were going to give recommendations.
Yeah, but I'll let everyone know when I find something. But I was actually surprised that Amazon has a lot of stuff, especially gay movies. They have a ton of gay movies.
They do have a ton of LGBT movies.
Right. The thing is that Netflix tend to just, you know, get rid of them, get rid of movies in general after a while. And it looks to me, I don't know, I could be wrong, that Amazon Prime, They stay a little longer in Amazon Prime. I mean, no, I could be wrong.
I haven't. I honestly don't know.
But I typed gay, homosexual.
Yes.
And then I got a ton of suggestions. And I was like, oh, great. Especially like international movies.
You have a higher, we're going off on a tangent already, but you have a higher
tolerance
for gay cinema than I do.
Yes,
because
I
hope I don't piss anybody off, but there's just a high signal to noise ratio when it becomes when you're looking at gay cinema. There's a lot of bad stuff out there. I'm not
I do think
too
it's
delicate
changing.
To say that I'm not saying there are no good gay films, and I mean gay, the kinds of films that play at gay or LGBT film festivals,
right.
That are, you know, devoted to being considered. It's not just any film with a gay character in it or an LGBT character in it. And I just, there's just, I've gone through them and I'm like, oh, these are painful.
Well, based on my experience, and I have watched a ton of them, is that it has changed a little. The thing is that most of these movies, most of these productions, they don't have a lot of money to work on them. So they don't hire talented people. So the actors are usually bad. The acting is bad. And it's not great because they don't have the money for great productions. But sometimes you watch, you know, bad movies that are actually great, if that makes any sense. But it has changed a little. I mean, it used to be that it was all about, you know, some very hot man in love or with whatever, with someone not attractive. You
who
know?
Spent and, most of his scenes in his underwear.
Yes, but that has changed, I have to say.
And speaking of underwear.
Yes.
Are you wearing underwear? Mark Skid is curious. What if you could wear the softest, most comfortable underwear you ever worn thanks to luxurious, earth-friendly, organic Pima cotton? What if you could wear underwear that upcycled a discarded water bottle and turned it into a silky, smooth waistband? What if, with every pair, $4 was donated on your behalf to save, feed, and cure the world? Mark Skid is a new underwear company with a mission to make a mark on the world. Mark Skid's belief is simple. Brands should be like the people we love and admire. They should possess a sense of humor, a strong character, and a purpose in living. Let's make a mark together. Use checkout code PODCAST for 15% off and free U.S. shipping. Go to markskid.com, MARCSKID.com. Use checkout code podcast for 15% off and free U.S. shipping. One pair of Markscape underwear can plant 4 trees, feed a child for 12 days, or deliver $80 in life-saving medical supplies. Markskid, comfort for you and the world. That's markskid.com. Use checkout code podcast for 15% off and free U.S. shipping.
I think that's awesome. I mean, you know, you buy something you need, and you're also helping people in the process. And it's fun underwear. It's great. The colors
fun,
are
it's bright.
Bright.
It's bold and soft.
It's really cool.
And stylish. And, you know, they're using, you know, recycled plastic bottles to help make these things, which is awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's it. I've been watching a lot of stuff, and I'll let you guys know. But yeah, so far I'm impressed with. I'm also watching a lot of TV shows, international TV shows. I'll talk more about them next time.
Okay. All right. Prepare your notes for next week's show. Real brief discussion. Schitt's Creek debuted season 4 this week in. It debuted earlier in Canada, and then it came on last night or the night before.
Wednesday? That's, Wednesday.
Two nights ago. It's all very scary.
I know.
This week has been crazy.
I'm actually surprised how the PR machine, I don't know if it's the PR machine, but it's just everywhere. Like the New York Times, all these newspapers and magazines talking about it, all these sites talking about
it. It's like sixth season of RuPaul's Drag Race
suddenly, all of a sudden, everybody's
talking about it. And
I'm happy for them.
Yeah, I mean, I first have to maintain that we were talking about this before the show, and I was like, we have to be careful and not act like we discovered this show early, because we didn't either. We were the late bandwagon jumpers as well. I think when the history of this show is written, people will note that the name of the show put a lot of people off for too long. It wasn't until the buzz came out on the show, and I said this, and I've heard so many other people say this, oh, I didn't realize that. I heard the name, and it sounded awful.
I actually watched an interview. I forget what talk show. And Dan was giving an interview, and he couldn't say the name of the show unless they put at the bottom of the screen the name of the show and the logo. So he couldn't just say it. It had to be accompanied by some graphic.
That is sad.
At the bottom of the page.
That is sad.
He had so much fun with it because they're like, so I can't say the name of the show unless there's something at the bottom of the screen. So he kept saying all the time so that the graphic could come up.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Anyway, but yeah, you're right. I guess the name, people were just like, oh my God, what is this?
But everyone's found out that it was in the New York Times this week. It was in, I think there was a write-up in the Atlantic. There were tons of write-ups actually. And the cast has been bouncing around doing a lot of promotional work in the U.S. It's back and better than ever. I mean, I think we've talked about the show on this podcast before. Success didn't go to its head. It didn't even feel like, I'm talking about the premiere last night. It didn't even feel like there was any interruption. I have to say, we did talk about the Christmas special on this podcast, and I was like, it's good, but it's a little goofy.
Well, the Christmas
specials,
we always talk about.
Yeah.
They're just, you know.
But this just feels like, all right, it's... They're back, and nothing's changed. Catherine O'Hara, that's
hilarious,
her Emmy reel.
Hilarious, yes.
They will submit her scenes in those first two. Because you can tell they were written around her. Like they were like, all right, Catherine O'Hara's our star. Basically, the star name here. She is a ridiculously talented comedic actress.
I love her. I think she's
She killed it in all of her scenes. Right. The scenes where she was dressed up as a crow in the nest.
I know.
And then the scenes where she was, she hadn't slept for 4 days were both just absolutely hilarious.
That scene, I couldn't stop laughing. And I was like laughing because the scene was so hysterical, but also like, I can't believe she's doing this.
I know.
She's just putting it out there. A crow. And it was just so funny.
Yeah, so funny.
That's what I love about great actors is that they're not afraid to go there.
That's a quality of a great actor.
Yes.
Yeah, they have to be fearless.
They just do it. I think the show is great. I do hope that's one tiny criticism that I have, that the characters don't become characters. You know what I mean? Like, they get too cartoonish.
Moira is a cartoon.
I know, but I just hope that it doesn't go way too far, that they still remain as quote-unquote people.
Yeah, well, I just wanted, that's a good segue, because I wanted to discuss the store getting robbed, plot line, because it was a showcase for Stevie and for David, and I always forget David's boyfriend's name.
I know, we always do, and it's horrible.
I always forget his name. I know the actor's name is actress Noah Reed, I think, but I can never remember David's boyfriend's name. Anyway, the scene where the whole plot line with the store getting robbed, it gave those three characters a showcase.
Right.
And I felt... I felt like it accomplished that. It accomplished this demonstrating that, okay, they're still there. Like, that's still Stevie. That's still David. Mm-hmm. The relationships haven't changed. Everybody, there's still comedy to be wrung out of this without turning everyone into a caricature. Really, the only person that ever was a caricature on that show was Roland.
Right.
And Chris Elliott's character.
I have to say, it's my least favorite character.
It is my least favorite. I think Chris Elliott is, he came out of the 80s comedy scene. He's he's part of comedy royalty because his father was a famous comic. I never really bought in. He wasn't my style of comic, but because I'm of the generation that made him famous, I do understand where he's going. He's a very 80s style. He's a very Gen X. He's a boomer, but he's a very Gen X style comic. And I give him some credit because he's still playing Gen X comedy. He hasn't actually tried to temper his brand.
Uh-huh.
He is who he is, and people love him or they don't. Yeah. I don't hate him, but I do agree that he's probably my least favorite character on the show.
He is my least favorite character, and there's like a temperature drop in a way when he...
That's a good way to put it.
When he comes into
it. It becomes very sitcom-y every time he steps out.
That's how I feel about him. But I have to say, one of my favorite characters is Jocelyn.
Jocelyn.
She's hilarious. That scene with the two of them and then Moore starts singing, that is so brilliant.
I know.
Think she's so... funny.
She's so great with Catherine O'Hara. Yes, they have a great rapport.
Hysterical. I was laughing so hard with the entire scene. Yeah.
So anyway, yes, Schitt's Creek is back. It's bigger than ever, but so far, the first two episodes, it just feels like they're on their game. They know.
Right.
If anything, they know that their strength lies in Catherine O'Hara's comedic skills and the ability of the rest of the cast to just wring comedy out of their interactions with each other, you know? If they remain true to those characters, that show will always be super funny. If they turn everyone into like Fonzie on Happy Days, which is a possibility, then it's going to fail.
Right.
But I don't see any reason for that happening.
I'm very happy for them. I hope more people discover the show.
Catherine O'Hara needs awards.
Seriously
needs awards. And I feel like they're like throwing down the gauntlet and they're going to be like, all right, you know what? We're going to write the whole season around her. And they should. Right. They not that everyone else isn't talented, but this show deserves Emmys, and she's their best bet at getting
phenomenal.
An Emmy.
She's everyone is great, but she is just phenomenal.
Yeah, love
I've
that show.
I've always loved her, and I think she's extremely talented. So I'm happy for everybody. I mean, I was reading all the tweets from Dan, like just beaming, just so happy the show was doing so well that he read the New York Times piece and he was like in tears.
Yeah.
I just love that. I'm so happy for them.
So happy for him. I'm going to move on and just do a quick take over the mic and just quickly talk about the season 2 premiere of Star Trek Discovery, which came on last night.
Which I watched with you.
You did watch with me because we now you can get your CBS All Access through Amazon Prime, and Amazon Prime can be displayed on our TV. We had problems last year where I could only watch it on my computer.
We got ourselves a big-ass TV for Christmas. Huge.
So I was really excited to watch the show on a big-ass screen, and I kept pausing it and saying, look at how much money they spent on this. And I don't just mean the digital effects, although the digital effects are cinematic.
You mentioned the costumes.
The scene like in the asteroid belt or whatever, the asteroid storm, that I saw no bumpy spots in those effects. That was really well done. It looked like something you could have seen up on a screen in a theater, and it still would have looked as good as it looked in our living room. Granted, we basically have a movie screen in our living room now. But yes, not just the digital effects. At one point, there was a walkthrough where the camera followed a character like down a hallway and through several sets. And I said to you, I was on the ship. It was on the Discovery. And I said, look at the size of this set. And I realized that a lot of details on a set like that are filled in digitally later. There's usually not ceilings on a set like that. All the screens that you see in the background, there's nothing on them. Right. That's all inserted later. I get that sometimes like a hallway only goes 10 feet and then they fill in the background so it looks like it's 200 feet. But even so, there's extensive set building going on. None of the sets look cheap. And then, as I mentioned to you last night, because we're so costume oriented, last night was like a fashion showcase mm-hmm. where there was like four or five variations on Starfleet uniforms that were just, and some of them were really fun. I loved Captain Pike's update on the Enterprise uniform, the yellow jacket and black pants. They had him out of it by the end of the season, episode, because I guess they all want them in the Discovery mm-hmm. outfits. But it looked great on him.
Right,
go ahead.
Wait. I have a question because I don't watch the show often. Did they introduce any new character?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, but they, most, of, like half of them were
oh,
new
really?
Characters. Well, not half
I
of them. That's
no
not
idea,
true. But the good-looking middle-aged guy who became the captain, he's a new character. Right, but he's based on a classic character from the old show. I mean, he is actually a classic character from the old show. There were the spacesuits that they wore, the metallic spacesuits in different colors.
Yeah,
I just loved it. I actually like clapped a little when they stepped out. They were like skin-tight metallic spacesuits. And they were such a throwback to like 80s sci-fi. And I said, I'm so glad they're having fun with it this mm-hmm. time. They're not trying to make everything look so damn serious. I mean, come on. You're on a spaceship. It's like the 22nd century or whatever. Have a little fun with it. And they did. It was high adventure, nonstop high adventure, to the point that I'm actually a little confused as to what the plot was. I have to rewatch it. There's just a lot went on, a lot of character introductions. They set off a ton of storylines at once. But it really looks like the show is getting away from the darker, grimmer aspects of the wartime show that they were doing last season. And they're fully committed to just big time space adventure. If I read a review this morning by a critic I really like, but he was so obsessed with the continuity issues, the fact that it does not slot in, because this is a prequel. It's supposed to be set 10 years before the series with William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy. And of course, you can't shoot a science fiction series in 2018 and expect it to look like a science fiction series set before one that was shot in 1966. So hardcore Trek fans have always had a problem with this. This reviewer had a problem with it. And I was like, this is not an issue. You've got to let this go. It has to stand on its own, regardless of the idea that it's supposed to look like a 1966, a cheaply made 1966 television show it's just silly to me. It's just ludicrous. Accept it for what it is. Is it good science fiction? Is it good Star Trek? And I have to say, unequivocally, that season two premiere, that's good Star Trek. I saw no reason to call that bad Star Trek. If you're hung up on the fact that I don't love the Spock storyline, I really don't. I wish they hadn't gone in that direction. But whatever they decided to, and I'll let that part play out. Everything else that was going on, I really truly loved. It was really funny because the bridge crew last night, they literally barely said a word the entire season last season. And not only did they say more in one episode than they did in an entire previous season, but they actually made the characters stand up and say their names which I thought was, it wasn't subtle, but I don't think it was meant to be subtle. I think it was more like, all right, we get it. We did not do right by these characters. So here they are, one by one by one. Here are their names, which I thought, again, what a fun way to just answer the criticisms and move forward. So
I do think that show's like that one. You have to have fun with it. You can't be too serious about the whole thing.
Right.
I mean, it's a genre. You just have to go with it.
Yep, exactly. I've taught you that.
Yes.
I told you that about superhero films.
Yes, yes. It's true.
I sat him down many, many years ago and made him watch Christopher Reeve playing Superman. And I told him then, I was like, the reason this is iconic is because he makes you believe it.
Right.
And he never, ever, ever doesn't believe it himself as an actor. He totally buys into the character, as ludicrous as he looks in those panties, mm-hmm. those red panties on screen. But Christopher Reeve gave it nothing but dignity because he knew that's how you sell it. And the best genre films, the best science fiction films, the best superhero films, the actors just go with it.
Mm-hmm.
I would never claim that, say, Star Wars A New Hope is a film, the original Star Wars film, is a film loaded with excellent acting. It really isn't. But every single one, Carrie Fisher, Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, they went with it. They knew that the only way this works is if we just go full bore. And it is the only reason it works, especially since the script of that movie is terrible. Ooh, pissing the fans off.
Oh, God.
I know.
Here we go.
Anyway, moving away from dissing Star Wars to praising Star Trek, it's a great season opener. I'm very excited. It's expensive as hell looking. Very excited that they are smart enough to realize what they have in casting Michelle Yeoh, who wound up having one of the biggest films of the year last year in Crazy Rich Asians, and now they're spinning her character off. She's getting her own show.
Oh, wow.
Her own Star Trek show.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. A Star Trek show with a middle-aged Asian lady as its lead,
awesome.
Playing a badass. I'm like, come the hell on. That is freaking awesome. And then coming up, they're working on Patrick Stewart's return to the franchise with the Picard series, which I may cry. I'm so not even joking about that. I may actually cry.
Please, okay, David.
Please do not make that. I've told you a million times, I am David Rose.
Yes.
I am David Rose to a T. I know probably half the gay men who watch the show say that. You know how everybody says they're, oh, I'm a Carrie, I'm a Miranda, I am a David freaking Rose. Anyway, that's my thought on Star Trek and your thoughts on Schitt's Creek, or our thoughts on Schitt's Creek.
Right.
But you know what? Let's talk about our thoughts on ModCloth.
Oh, yes.
How about that? What is ModCloth? Well, they're sponsoring this portion of the podcast. At ModCloth, there's no such thing as an ordinary outfit. They're not afraid to wear what they want, to go against the current, and be unapologetically themselves. Crafted by a team of in-house designers, their signature styles include hand-drawn prints, standout silhouettes, and an inclusive size range that celebrates all women. Whether you're still craving cozy sweaters or you're ready to start stocking up for spring, and it is, we are getting into the spring shopping season, which
it.
Is so exciting.
It is awesome.
Actually, my favorite clothes shopping season, a lot of people love going into the fall and the holidays, but when they start bringing out the spring stuff, I get really excited.
Yeah.
So anyway, whether you're still craving cozy sweaters or you're ready to start stocking up for spring, ModCloth is your go-to. You can transition from layered looks to looks you can wear as the weather warms up. And if you're jonesing for a getaway, they have a collection of amazing swimwear suited just for you. So what are you waiting for? Hit the site and discover something uniquely you. ModCloth believes fashion should celebrate all women. That's why they offer a full range of sizes from XXS to 4X. And if you've got a question about fit, their team of mod stylists... That's lovely. I love that.
I know.
Their team of mod stylists can hook you up with complimentary sizing and styling help. Like, come on, that's crazy.
What I love about...
Crazy good.
What I love about ModCloth and that, what you just said, it's uniquely you. If you have a unique style or if you want to try to, you know... wear something different that not everyone is wearing. ModCloth is the perfect place to find these items.
I agree.
They have unique stuff that you basically don't see anywhere else. And it's just beautiful, beautiful stuff. Unique, different.
They're the epitome of a strong brand. And you actually do want that when you are shopping. You want a brand and a retailer that knows what they're who they're selling to and what that person wants. And ModCloth is the epitome of that.
I love it. Just go to the search box and type anything, and you see so many things will come up.
Agreed. So to get 25% off your purchase of $100 or more, go to modcloth.com. That's modcloth.com. And enter code TLO at checkout. This offer is valid for one-time use only and expires on... April 7th, 2019. That's 25% off your purchase of $100 or more. Go to modcloth.com and enter code TILO at checkout before April 7th, 2019. It's springtime shopping season, my favorite time of year. All right. Thank you, ModCloth. Now, this makes a perfect segue into our red carpet discussion.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pull away from the microphone because this is the part where everyone's starting to say, okay, Tom, shut up. Shut up, Tom. So I'm going to throw names at you. We're going to start by talking about the up-and-comers of this award season. And this morning, we put Steph and James up from If Bill Street Could Talk, and we said that he was this year's Timothée Chalamet.
I just love when that happens.
Let's start with him.
I just love when that happens. First of all, we were watching Homecoming.
Yes, he was also in Homecoming with Julia Roberts.
And this is the first time I saw him on my television. So I was like, wow, first of all, so charismatic, so gorgeous, so handsome, so talented, so everything.
Yeah, charming.
I know. So I was thrilled to see all the love he got on the red carpet. And what I love about these newcomers is that what happens in terms of fashion is that they are getting names. They're getting big names in the fashion
industry. These up-and-comers, yes, they are.
It's not like in the past that, their stylist, if they even had one, would struggle to get anything for them to wear. But now they just come out and on the red carpet, like wearing big names.
Yeah.
We posted today him wearing Etro, beautiful suit. And that's happening a lot with pretty much all of them.
I agree.
Which is awesome.
It is awesome.
The fashion houses are getting smarter because they understand that, you know, that's a fantastic way to sell their products and to sell their image and brand and so on.
I totally agree.
And for us, it's fantastic because we have all these amazing looks on the red carpet.
I agree. I was just going to say that about, like, we'll start about Stephen James specifically, these up-and-comers. And we... evoked Timothée Chalamet for a reason because he embodies this. He's last year's version of this. These up-and-comers are not coming out in basic fashion or the kind of fashion you see all the time on the red carpet. They're taking risks. They're they're wearing things that other people aren't wearing. They're going for much bolder declarative. And I think this is part of a larger discussion about millennial stars and the Gen Z stars, the generation right behind them, and how they, because that of the nature of those generations who grew up in as internet natives and social media natives, they understand the idea of branding innately as a generation, the way other generations
don't. They
understand
visual appeal like nobody else.
Exactly. So the younger and younger stars are all coming in with strong ass game,
right?
Because They know, their whole generation knows that. Right. They know what it looks like, what an Instagram account is like and everything.
It's the selfie generation. They know exactly.
Generation on the red carpet. That's exactly, that might be the title of this podcast this week.
Oh my God, there we go. But I'm just excited that they're getting all this incredible stuff, big names, you know, beautiful gowns and garments and everything. And I just think it's great. I think it's great for the fashion houses. I think it's great for them because they look amazing and they get more publicity.
Right.
So everybody's happy and everybody gains.
So in Stephen James's case, I would say that he is working a very bold and bright look. He tends to wear suiting that, I have to give him credit. He's sticking with the tight suiting, the tight, small plaid suits, which everybody's sort of trending away from that. But he's finding these gorgeous ones from like Gucci and Etro
that look amazing on him. Etro has the most beautiful stuff.
I absolutely
love them.
And his clothes are bright and really bright for the red carpet. He makes these juxtapositions. He mixes and matches things. He is one of the more adventurous of the male red carpet up-and-comers. I mean, we're going to get into how male red carpentry has changed drastically in the last year. And there are people who were doing bolder work than him. But for someone who's young and new, he's not afraid to mix things up. And it's very much in a Chalamet kind of way.
Right.
I say Chalamet and it's actually Chalamet.
Chalamet.
Anyway.
I'm a little tired.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that.
Lorenzo can't stand him.
No, that's not true.
Don't yell in your mic. All right, so moving on from Stephen James, I'd like to mention his co-star, Kiki Layne, from If Beale Street Could Talk. She is not getting as much name recognition as she probably should be because she's doing adventurous work as well, right by his side most of the time.
I mean, she's wearing Dior Couture, and to have access to Dior Couture...
As an unknown, relative unknown.
That's not common.
A black relative unknown. Right. Let's be clear here. There was a time where, even Kerry Washington had to struggle at the beginning of scandal years.
It's very true. So I'm happy, again, very, very happy that these actors are getting big names.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff.
And taking these opportunities to be like, you know what? I'm not going to wear a blue men's suit. I'm not going to wear a black dress where you can see my panties. I'm going to wear a crazy ass metallic pantsuit with a bold purple pussy bow blouse. Like, they're dressing fresh. They're dressing different. And they're branding themselves very, very, very well.
I think they're more aware of the impact that they make when they wear something,
Selfie generation.
It's a different approach to the whole thing.
They're very visually oriented, and they are very well aware of what a brand is, and how to establish a brand.
And I think in a way, they are even a little more savvy, I'd say, when it comes to criticism, because they have Instagram accounts all the time, and I'm sure they're flooded with negative stuff.
Exactly.
That they just brush it off.
They don't pay attention to
they
it.
They don't pay much attention to it. So I think they're more open to just wear whatever they want and not worry too much about the criticism of it.
Agreed. It's very exciting. Do you have anything else you want to say about Kiki Layne?
No, I think she's phenomenal. She's gorgeous.
She's stunning.
She does the red carpet really, really well. And she's, like I said, she's wearing all these big names and beautiful stuff.
It'll be interesting to see, with all of these stars that we're mentioning, it'll be interesting to see, we said, they're doing really bold work on the red carpet, but the Oscars doesn't ask for that kind of boldness.
Right, right.
It wants you to show up
Which
looking like
one.
I'm just curious to see how they're going to relate to that. Before we move on to the other one that we mentioned, there's also Awkwafina.
Yes.
Who came out this year in I mean, the whole Crazy Rich Asians cast really hit the red carpet. And someone like Gemma Chan, it was hearts aflutter every time she stepped out. But Awkwafina, among that cast, she's the one who's like, I'm going to dress young. I'm going to dress 21st century. I'm going to dress street. You know, I'm going to dress to reflect myself as much as I can. While still being bold and high fashion. And listen, out of everyone we've mentioned and are about to mention, she was probably the least successful. There's a lot of really awkward looks under her belt in the last year and a half. But you can't take away how bold she was and the range of styles that she brought to it and the way that she uses it to establish her brand. That's Awkwafina.
I think she's hysterical on the red carpet. First of all, sometimes she poses for the camera and she has this very serious look.
Which
cracks me up every time.
I know. Some people think she's being serious, and
she's just
not
joking. She's just having fun on the red carpet, and I love that. I love people who understand that the red carpet is just a place to have fun, you know, and sell your product.
Right.
So I love when people have fun with fashion, and especially when you have all these names and designers, you know, showering you with items. So yeah, go ahead and have fun.
I agree.
Elsie Fisher.
I was going to move on to her. She was the final person that we were going to mention.
Awesome.
As this red carpet up and comer. She's my new style.
Exploded
hero.
With her movie.
Her new movie, Eighth Grade. I believe it's her only movie, Eighth Grade, and for which she's actually been picking up awards. She picked up a Critics' Choice Award this week. Remains to be seen. Maybe she can get an Oscar nomination. Who knows? But the interesting thing about Elsie Fisher is that she, we've come in for a lot of criticism over the years for how and when we talk about teenage girls on the red carpet. People don't like it when they get criticized, and we've learned how to do it, I think, in a way that keeps it to the fashion. But if there was a through line, whenever we talked about, say, Kiernan Shipka or Millie Bobby Brown. I know there are other ones that we talked about, but those two stand out because they were real fashionistas at the age of 13. This is our take. Listen, everyone has a take, but our take is that when it comes to dressing under 16-year-olds on the red carpet in high fashion, you have to acknowledge that they are under 16 years old. That doesn't mean that you dress them like children at all, but trying to dress them like an adult is... it never quite works. Adult high fashion. And I'm talking high fashion. Like, your average 15-year-old boy can wear a men's suit if he's big enough. And your average 15-year-old girl can wear a woman's cocktail dress if she's big enough. It's not the idea of being in adult clothes. It's clothes that could give off too adult of a vibe. Mm-hmm. And again, many people took that criticism on our part to mean that we thought they were being sexualized. And I actually don't think Kiernan or Millie Bobby Brown have ever truly been sexualized in the way they dressed. That was not the criticism. It was, you're taking all the childhood out of them.
You're taking any
sort of sense of joy or adventure or fun, and you're dressing them like 25 or 30-year-olds. High fashion 25-year-old, you know, whatever. Let them. There is a way to do high fashion and still be juvenile.
Right.
And Elsie Fisher is, if I could have just dreamed it up myself, that I think that's what
I think the stylists and the designers are kind of learning.
They're learning.
I think they are, in a way.
Yeah. Because make no mistake, Elsie Fisher's looks are high fashion.
Yes.
Some of them are editorial and could even be in Vogue.
Right.
But I don't think any of them lose sight of the fact that she's 15.
Right,
she's 15. Not only that, but she's a baby-faced 15-year-old. She looks like she's 12.
Here's a great example. She's wearing that black suit by Tom Brown
with
the bold details. Beautiful. And I'm so happy to see more Tom Brown on the red carpet.
Yeah.
Because people see the collections and they are crazy.
They are crazy.
And I love every single one of them. But it's nice to see that what you see on the red carpet, it's sort of like an inspired version or a more toned down version of
right.
what you see
right.
on the red carpet. And I love, I mean, I worship Tom Brown, as everyone knows by now.
Yes.
Knows by now. So I'm happy to see more people dressed.
I agree.
More people wearing, I mean, we had Laura Dern, so many people wearing right. Tom Brown.
The thing about Elsie Fisher's style is that, like I said, it's high fashion. Never not high fashion, but doesn't lose sight of her youth. And I feel like the pieces that she wears truly reflect what she wants mm-hmm. to wear.
She had that velvet for the...
For the Golden Globes, she wore a velvet yes. pantsuit. She wore she's worn yeah. pink jumpsuits and uh-huh. bright orange suits. She loves color, but what's great about her her style is that there's consistently across the board coverage. I'm not suggesting that a teenage girl needs to cover up. I'm suggesting that this is a preference of hers, and it's clearly being handled. Mm-hmm. If she wanted to wear miniskirts, she probably would demand right. to wear miniskirts. But she's consistently stepping out in suits
because that's
and
her
pantsuits.
Style. That's,
what that's she wants.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. I think it's a great message to send that she's not being pushed into being something she's not or looking a way she doesn't want to look.
I mean, we've talked about this before, and I'm thrilled to see women wearing anything, all kinds of things. Not just a dress, not just a cocktail dress.
I agree.
But
I agree.
Everything.
And we're
like
going to move on to, that's a great jumping off point because we're going to start talking about other ways that the red carpet has mm-hmm. changed, differences in menswear and womenswear, and some of the other more diverse faces on the red carpet when we come back after this short break. We'll be right back.
Talking celebrities, pop culture, TV, and fashion. This is Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're back on the Opinion Fest, very caffeinated and ready to talk more about the red carpet. I'm talking in a very slow, deliberate voice
NPR
because if I
movie.
Don't take control of myself, I'm going to start doing the rapid fire. Okay. So we talked about the new faces on the red carpet, the up-and-coming people on the red carpet. And I think we can't have that discussion without stopping and acknowledging the ladies of Pose.
Yes, yes. Well, that's the other thing, too. These ladies are major on the red carpet now.
So we're talking Dominique Jackson, India Moore, and MJ Rodriguez.
And India Moore it was just featured in the Louis Vuitton Spring 2019 ad campaign.
Yes.
Which is awesome. Absolutely awesome.
Not inconsequential to this discussion. All three of these women are transgender women
of
color. That's why it's, and let's just note, like Laverne Cox, you were there first.
Oh, I know.
Janet
Mock,
you were there first. And they deserve to be recognized, Janet and Laverne. But we talked about them this week on the site, Dominique, MJ, uh-huh. and India, and how they just stepped it up a level past. Laverne is still, I have to say, struggling to get big-name designers. I'm not sure why that is.
Mm-hmm.
But the women on Pose, my God, they're all stepping out in Stella right. McCartney and Dior right, and Louis right. Vuitton. They're doing all right for
what
themselves.
What I love about them, their case, is that, first of all, they're getting big names. And, I mean, Marc Jacobs has used drag queens, for example, you know, before.
Yes.
Which is great. But Marc Jacobs is a big homosexual like us. My point is that when you have a major house like Louis Vuitton taking mm-hmm. that approach, making that decision to use a transgender or a drag queen, mm-hmm. you know, for their campaign. That's big.
Yeah.
It's more than just a gay designer supporting the community.
Mm-hmm.
It's a major house making that decision that they have to have.
Yes, and in the case of transgender women, I would argue right. or I would say that it's also about the world of fashion understanding.
Right, exactly.
Accepting a more understanding and open definition of beauty mm-hmm. and stylishness
right.
because it's always been a very restrictive definition from the part of the fashion world that left out people of color or people who were not on the, you know, gender binary or people who were transgender.
Right.
So this means a lot. That it meant a lot when Laverne Cox is doing
right.
it still. But it means a lot to see these three women in unison out at events together looking stunning in world-class fashion.
Right.
There is something to be said in our image-obsessed culture about how that kind of representation, sort of like high fashion glamour representation, maybe there's something, you know, of course there's a lot of things about it that are shallow, but when a group reaches that, when they are handed that, and that's a way of the status quo saying you're in, you're part of the status quo.
And it might not feel that way for someone who is not in the industry like we are.
Or isn't interested in fashion. Right. There are plenty of transgender women who couldn't care less about this stuff.
But a few years ago, I mean, for a while, we would never get emails from a black actresses or actors on the red carpet. Information, ID, whatever they were.
Yeah, never got it.
Never. We never. It was always a struggle to get.
Except for
anybody.
When Nicole Beharie wore that one skirt, and the PR person contacted us and said she's too fat to be wearing our stuff.
Well, that's a whole different story.
Yep.
But my point is that it was hard to get information anytime a black person or an Asian person was on the red carpet. We would never get that information. It was always about white people. And so I'm thrilled to get emails now. We just got an email today about this Stephen James. We get emails from all the Pose ladies.
Right.
So it's awesome. I'm happy that this is happening.
I agree.
Are getting the recognition that they deserve. My God, yes. It's nice. It's nice to just open your email box and have an email there, listening.
Yeah, you have to understand, our inbox is nothing but PR.
Right.
Nothing
but PR.
But PR. Literally hundreds a day emails from various PR agencies who are just, we're on mass lists. It's not because we're special. It's just because we're on lists as media. And they identify every celebrity, what they're wearing. Or sometimes they don't tell you what they're wearing, but, you know, they're letting you know that people are out.
I do my homework most of the time, and I usually ID the pieces myself. But it's nice to get emails where you have that type of information.
Yes. And as Lorenzo was saying, first off, it wasn't that long ago, and it was for a long time where we would open our inbox and it was all white celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
It was all celebrities under 40. It was all celebrities under a size 6. And you got no information about anybody who stepped outside and we're talking like 6-7 years ago. Mm-hmm. That's what our inbox looked like. And now you open up your inbox and it's just a rainbow of transgender and black and Latinx Asian representation, plus size, women in their 70s. You know, this is what, it's crazy, but 5-6 years ago, it would have been weird for us to get emails letting us know what Jane Fonda wore.
Right.
The night before.
Right.
We would have been like, check this crazy email out. Now it's, you know, it doesn't it, even
it's
seem
common,
weird.
Yeah, which is great. That's,
it
that's
is
the
great.
Whole point.
You know what else is great? Away
I
luggage.
Know.
Away. First class luggage at a Coach price. Away is a team of thinkers, seekers, and designers. Their focus and inspiration is movement, times of transition, exploration, and surprise. They create special objects that are at home on the road that carry you forward, making your trip easier and, in a small way, your life better. They were founded by two friends from New York who found themselves at JFK with dead phones, delayed flights, and a bright idea, luggage with power. Possibly one of Lorenzo's favorite ideas of all time.
Right, I know.
Thus, the Away carry-on was born. The approach is simple. They create special objects that are designed to be resilient, resourceful, and essential to the way you travel today. They ask thousands of people how they pack, why they travel, and what bugs them most about their luggage. Then they designed a bag that solved a few old problems, like sticky wheels, and a few new ones, like dead cell phones. Away uses high-quality materials while offering a much lower price compared to other brands by cutting out the middleman and selling directly to you. Let's see. There's a 100-day trial. You can live with it, buy with it, travel
Which
with it, Instagram
awesome.
It.
Yeah.
Yes. And if at any point you decide it's not for you, you can return it for a full refund. No questions asked.
Right. I remember going to stores and buying suitcases, and I was like, all right, I think this will do. And then you travel once with it, and you're like, oh my God, I hate it.
Or something. Yeah.
It's not what I was expecting.
Away is not that way. You will not be disappointed with this
Away
luggage.
Away
is not that way. Away uses high-quality materials while offering a much lower price compared to other brands by cutting out the middleman. Choose from a variety of colors and 4 sizes, the carry-on, the bigger carry-on, the medium, or the large for extended stays. All suitcases are made with premium German polycarbonate, unrivaled built in strength and impact, resistant and very light wheel, lightweight. The interior features a patent-pending compression system helpful for overpackers like Mr. Lorenzo, and four 360-degree spinner wheels guarantee a
spin-away
ride. Yes, so for $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com, awaytravel.com/TLO. And use promo code TLO during checkout. That's awaytravel.com/TLO. Use promo code TLO during checkout for $20 off a suitcase. Thank you, Away Travel. All right, so ladies opposed, very nice. Anything else to say about them?
No, I'm just very excited that they're on the red carpet all the time. And it's not just one of those events, like, it's not one of the, just a gay event. It's just... Awards.
No, they're at the Critics' Choice Awards. They're at the Golden Globe Awards. You know, they're at big industry parties,
which is great because they're acknowledging their existence, number one, yeah. and their talent.
Yeah.
So I think it's phenomenal. I'm very happy.
Very much the seat at the table syndrome.
Right. Exactly.
They have a seat at the table now. And this makes a good segue to our next point about gender presentation on the red carpet. Moving on to their co-star Billy Porter of Pose. We want to talk a little bit about how menswear, we've talked about this before, about menswear has opened up this year. Thanks to people like Billy Porter and Ezra Miller, there's some super queer menswear going on out there, some super paradigm shattering menswear. And then there's other queer actors like Ben Whishaw, who's wearing very lightly queer outfits, I would call them.
There's
a little bit of whimsy, a little bit of lightness, a little bit of sparkle to his looks, but they're basic menswear, high-end menswear. And then moving off the queer scale, there's people, of course, like Chadwick Boseman, who are challenging menswear shapes and coming out and saying, no, I'm not going to wear a business suit. I'm not even going to wear a regular suit. I'm going to wear, a long coat or something like that. I'm going to wear something that's beaded. I'm going to wear a pair of cropped pants instead of a pants that break over my shoe. Like, this is actually good. This is really good.
Right. And there is a difference between when you represent a house, like Jared Leto, for example, with Gucci. I'm sure he likes that type of style and clothing, but it's nice to see that these people are not necessarily associated with the brand, that they're forced to wear that kind of, outfit.
Right.
That they're making their own decision. That's what they want to wear. So it's nice because it gives you a, an idea, or it gives you a little bit of their style, their personal style. That's what they want to do.
If you've listened to us or read us for any length of time, you know that any bit of fabulous menswear that challenges the idea that we all have to wear suits, basic business suits all the time, we cannot applaud that enough. Like, Billy Porter stepped out in that brown satin jumpsuit with a big orange bow on it. I will go on record and say that I think technically that outfit is hideous. But... but I am so appreciative of the boldness of that.
I was not expecting that.
You were expecting me to say that?
I thought you were going to say technically wonderful, brilliant, but no, hideous.
Oh, come on. It's brown satin with a big orange bow. It's not gorgeous. It's still fabulous, though. It's crazy fabulous, in fact. It's bold, and it's queer, and it's different, and it's next level.
I think that's a great new movement. Hideous clothes... that people make them look fabulous. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Like Anne Hathaway wearing, what was that? Elisab or whatever she wore.
I'm sorry. You did it again. What are you talking about?
She wore that animal print dress.
At the Golden Globes?
Yes. And we talked about it, how it was a hideous outfit, but, she made it work.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting that, you have these people making.
Well, again, that actually makes a fairly good segue off of menswear into women's wear. Can I say that?
Yeah.
Because just as the men are challenging the paradigm of menswear, and like I said, we've singled out Billy Porter and Ezra Miller wearing that Moncler, chess piece thing, as well as other things that Ezra Miller's worn on the red carpet. We're sensing this thing in mainstream celebrity women's wear of getting away from certain of the tropes that defined celebrity women's wear for such a long time, namely, basically skin. There's a lot of covering up going on, and even less, because when you say something like that, you sound a little prudish and judgmental, as if skin mattered. How much skin one exposes, doesn't determine whether an outfit is chic or not. But It is interesting that this is happening, but the other thing concurrent with that is that there's this trend towards taking up a lot of space. Women are wearing big outfits, like Lady Gaga's big-ass suit from a couple months ago, or like we just had Laura Dern at the Valentino menswear show where she just wore this massive red cape coat ensemble. And just, it wasn't subtle. It was blood red. She matched the whole outfit blood red, and it was meant to be big, and it wasn't meant to have a feminine shape to it or be delicate or pretty. It was meant to take up space. And I feel like you're seeing more and more of that. Anne Hathaway was on, I think, what was it, Jimmy Fallon this week? And she came out in that big, oversized, but fabulous, glittery, fabulous suit. And this, and just as, you know, you see Billy Porter and Ezra Miller and Ben Whishaw representing on the red carpet because, you know, queer representation is rising, and you see Chadwick Boseman representing on the red carpet because color, you know, representation of people of color is rising on the red carpet, but with
non-white representation in general.
Basically, yeah, people of color. But with this, it feels very much a response to things like hashtag Me Too and hashtag Time's Up and the way women in the entertainment industry are examining the expectations put on them and what they're willing to put up with. Another example is Sarah Paulson.
Right. I mean, yeah, she's killing it on the red carpet. She's just wearing this incredible brand.
And she's not concerned with like pretty or feminine.
No. We're going to have her today.
Yeah.
And she's wearing this big red, just red coat, big. And what else?
Like loud.
She's
wearing, Prada gown that looked like it was airbrushed, you know.
That stuff. Yeah.
She's not dressed. She's wearing gowns and dresses. I'm not trying to say she's totally shattering the paradigm here, but she does represent this idea of, I'm going to take up space. I'm going to be really bold. I don't care if I look scary or crazy. I'm not here to look just pretty. And that's very much an underline of her kind of style.
I think that's the approach now, is to create a moment on the red
exactly.
carpet.
Exactly, yes.
People are understanding that, you know, when you do these things, you're all over the internet.
Right.
People are all talking about you.
Right. And as people who have written on about and reported on celebrity red carpetry and celebrity promotional wear for over a decade now, I have to say we've always been struck by the idea that to be a celebrity woman meant to dress in, you know, very feminine outfits that revealed your legs or revealed your breasts or revealed your arms or that cinched your waist or that there's honestly not a thing wrong with any of those things. But the fact that it was so uniformly applied to women in entertainment, I was like, do they really all love walking around in miniskirts like that? Because most of the women in my life, that there's a variation. Some women never wear skirts, you know? And yet it was just considered a skirt. You had to show your legs and you had to show your arms. And you had to cinch yourself in and take up as little... I just look back at when we started at this job, Lorenzo, and it was all bandage dresses, bandage dresses, and gigantic bear trap shoes that they couldn't walk in. And
I'm just happy that lace is gone for a while.
Well, and then for the longest time, it was panty bearing dresses. And again, listen, I have nothing against a woman who wants to do that, who wants to dress that way. My question was always, does everyone in entertainment want to dress that way?
When you dictate that as the look for the red carpet, that's when we have.
That's when you're like, wow, that's really not fair to women. Like in the industry, you shouldn't have to expect them to wear body suits on a red carpet when the men are wearing, you know, suits. So I'm very excited to see that.
No,
I think it's a good thing for the culture that these women, I think Sarah Paulson is like leading the charge here, are they want to step out looking high fashion, looking amazing, looking fierce, but pretty or delicate or feminine in the traditional sense, not on the menu. And it shouldn't have to be on the menu for everybody.
See, we're paying Sarah Paulson a compliment.
We've always loved her. You know that. We've always loved Sarah Paulson. Loved her acting. Going back to Down with Love.
I remember
she was in Down with Love with what's her name? Renee Zellweger.
I still love her.
Yeah, that's when we fell in love with her. She takes a lot of risks on the red carpet, which means people like us are going to let her know when the risk didn't pay off. That's just kind of our job. All right, I'm yakking. Is there anything you want? Oh, Yalitza, Yalitza Aparicio.
Yes, yes, fantastic.
She's just the new face on the red car. I'm going to set up the intro.
Well,
and then you're talking.
Let Yalitza Aparicio. Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
Yalitza Aparicio, it's a, you know, she's the main star in Roma, the Mexican movie that is all over the internet. And if you haven't watched it or seen it yet, I highly recommend it. It's a great movie. It's, and she plays the main character. I'm going to be honest here. She's not an actress. He picked her. She's one of those examples where one of the situations where you pick someone because someone is going to portray that character very, very well. But that doesn't mean you were an actor. Does that make any sense? Anyway, so I think that's what she is. She does a phenomenal job, but I'm trying to be very honest here. I don't think she have a career as an actress. I doubt. I'd be surprised.
Right.
But she created she created a space. She created a moment that it's very important that you are having a Mexican person, you know.
Indigenous.
On the red
carpet. Non-European Mexican.
Right. Getting all this attention on the cover of magazines,
right.
and on the red carpet, wearing major, major names. She wore Dior, she wore Prada,
yeah.
Miu Miu,
she looks
Stella
beautiful.
McCartney. She wore all these incredible names, and it's fantastic.
And then you realize, you look at that, and you realize, wow.
Right.
They really define beauty in such a narrow way that this is a shock that she's considered beautiful. You see women like this every day walking down the street. Why is it such a shock?
Right. I see her on the red carpet and I can't believe she's there. And I say that because you don't see that type of representation on the red carpet often. Not at all.
I agree.
And it's just beautiful. I mean, we've been posting her not only on our site, but also when it doesn't fit the site, I'm always tweeting about her. And the responses are so great. People always say, oh, my God, I can't believe I see my mother. I see my grandmother. I see myself, you know, on the red carpet for the first time. Because you don't see that kind of representation. So I think it's phenomenal that she is creating this space, creating this moment for, you know, people to pay attention to that type of beauty. And I hope that it sticks. Because that's the thing with the fashion industry. They tend to elevate a certain minority or and then it's just for a few minutes and then they never mention it again.
Right.
Or it goes away. So I hope this one sticks. This type of representation will be, you know, ticking. It will be on the internet and it will be all over the sites and magazines for a while because she's so sweet. You can tell she has a big smile. Her interviews are great. She used to be a teacher, I believe. Yes, and she was chosen to play the part. Like I said, she is very, very good in Roma. And let's see what happens.
Yes, but right now she makes a wonderful example of
the ways
our main thesis of this show, which is to show how the red carpet really has opened up in the last year. And let's keep it going, you know?
I'm excited.
Let's keep it going. Oh, and by the way, Shangela and Willem should be hosting.
Oh my God!
The Oscars,
yes,
right?
We
am I wrong?
That. Yes.
Everybody, get on social media. Shangela and Willem need to present at the Oscars because I know hosting is too big of a
hosting is too big and it's not going to happen. But a category, why not?
They need to be presenting a category.
They were in
A Star Is Born, and how can you not have drag queens on the Oscars on any award show in 2019
that
when they are at the center of what's going on in pop culture right
now.
That
would be phenomenal. And they're both great on
stage.
They're
awesome. They'd be hilarious. Right. They'd look sickening on the stage.
Right.
Come on, let's do it.
Everybody,
Shangela and William and Willem, they need to be.
Yes, I totally agree. I think would be a great moment for television and would just, you know, tie with the beautiful bow, this whole conversation.
So get out there and beg for them.
Yes.
Tag the Academy and tell them that's what you want to see. It probably won't work, but what the hell? Keeps y'all off the pipe, doesn't
right.
it? All right. Love you guys.
Love you.
Have a great...
Oh my God, you're terrible. Anyway.
Hugs, not drugs. Have a great week. Thank you for listening to us and we love you all.
We love you very much. All right. Bye.